Hi, I'm Lisa Morgan, and today on The Weekly Reader, we're going to change things up a bit. University of Baltimore MFA professor and author Marian Winnick is here as always, but this time we're going to talk about her new book, The Baltimore Book of the Dead. Hi, Marian.
Hi, Lisa. So I've written a sequel to The Glen Rock Book of the Dead, which I published 10 years ago. Both books contain 400-word portraits of people I knew who died, both people very close to me, like my mother and father, and then all the way to people like Lou Reed, David Bowie, and Prince, who may not have known it, but were a big part of my life.
Well, that's an interesting collection of people. But I also noticed on your publication date, you had an essay published in The Lily, the online publication from The Washington Post, about grieving. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think what I realized is because I was widowed in my 30s and I wrote a book about it, I learned how pleasurable it can be to kind of commune with your dead loved ones by writing about them. And I had that pleasure over and over in writing these books of the dead, in thinking about the people that I love and miss, and in being able to release some of my grief by writing the pieces. And I was going to read you one that addresses grief kind of directly. It's called Two Slips of the Knife, died 2008. 2012. Forgive me for putting the two of them together as if I could lure this story once and for all into a very small pen, shut the gate, and run away. It's the one where the highway and the weather, the big cars and the tiny errors, steal her forever, our precious golden girl with a heart full of good. One was a 16-year-old on her way to a birthday party, a dear, down-to-earth philosopher tomboy who loved summer camp and golf. One was a 20-year-old driving to her job at Francesca's at the mall, saving for a move to Montana. She was an artist, a dog lover, and a tree hugger, the beloved baby of her family. They both were. And their mothers? One, my sister mom in Texas, one, my student in an MFA program in Pittsburgh, got the same phone call. The one where they tell you there was nothing that could be done. After the moment when nothing could be done came the avalanche of doing. People sent messages and placed phone calls and made pots of chili and bought boxes of scones. They pushed back the furniture, filled plastic cups with forks and spoons. They went to the drugstore. They booked airline tickets. They went through photographs. They went to buy tissues, retrieved crumpled tissues, pulled white tissues like doves from the box. Some people were just doing their jobs, conducting investigations, delivering flowers. Finally, all that was over and everyone went away. Back to their unharmed children, their familiar tasks and uncomplicated conversations, back to the world where even the t-shirts insist life is good. Oh, my sweet ladies, friends of my heart, broken like a vase or a bone or a car, broken beyond full repair or even the desire for it. If you wait long enough, I've heard, the pain somehow eases, very slightly, very slowly, one notch at a time. I will be there, I swear. I want to see.
That's Marian Winnick reading from the Baltimore Book of the Dead, her just-released book of essays about people who she loved and who died. You write a lot about grieving, and you seem to have a lot of wisdom about the subject. Where does that come from?
Well, I think it comes from experience. Like I said, I went through a series of pretty tragic events in my 30s, losing my husband and also a stillborn baby. And those things changed me forever. They changed me into a person that is on the other side of, you know, one of the worst things that can ever happen to you. And that has made me a lot more able to deal with death and grief when it comes in the lives of people I know. A lot of people are just terrified at the thought of having to say something or spend any time with someone who's just had a tragedy. And I'm the person that can usually stand to be there because even just by looking at me, they know that there is a future.
Well, you know, it's true. We don't do death very well in America. We need someone to handhold us sometimes. I mean, people are just devastated. Their lives fall apart, and they really don't have a place to put their grief. It creates a hole in their life that they just have a hard time filling up. It's nice to have people around you that can kind of do those things.
I think that, you know, one of the best things that a person who's holding a lot of grief can do is find a way to express the grief, whether it's writing, whether it's planting a memorial garden, whether it's visual art, or it can even be listening to music that is on the subject that you can relate to in your heart. I mean, I think the arts and creativity have a lot to offer in allowing us to let go of some of our grief. Storytelling, You know, talking, it's a gift to a person who's lost someone to ask them a question and let them talk about the person, you know, and that's something that people are afraid to do.
You know, a lot of the stories are of course, heartbreaking in the book, but there's also, they're funny and joyful, and they're just such great tributes to people who you know, and they're not just to the people who died, but to those that they leave behind, which I think that's got to be sort of a wonderful gift to give to somebody, too, to know that the person that they're missing so much is missed by others.
It's one of the fun things about this book was the research. I mean, every single piece involved me getting in touch with, you know, surviving family members or friends of these people, because I usually did not have all the details. And usually, I mean, I think in every case, people were so happy to talk about the person and share anecdotes with me. I mean, there's tons of stuff in the book that I did not know about. Like, there's a piece about my uncle, and he had a heroic incident where he saved someone in a plane crash. And I was able to read about that in the New York Times. I was able to talk to his son and hear about it from that perspective. And, you know, it was just a vague memory before I looked into it.
Wow. You know, I'm always struck by the death rituals and traditions of other cultures, like a Viking send-off or funeral pyres. The Day of the Dead is one that I really love myself. Do you think that we'll ever learn to grieve and mourn, but also to live with our dead in American culture?
Well, I think the way that Day of the Dead has been embraced in the past couple decades is a really good sign. The Day of the Dead is, you know, a holiday that combines mourning and celebration, and that it's a lot of like what I'm talking about. It gives an outlet, a positive outlet for grief. And, you know, in the shrines that they build, the parades, the parties in the cemetery. So, I mean, I think we can borrow from other cultures, and it will help us.
Well, speaking of the Day of the Dead, you've got a little treat planned for combining one of your favorite holidays and the release of your new book.
Yes, I'm going to have a Day of the Dead party at the University of Baltimore on October 25th at 7 p.m. And yes, I know that the Day of the Dead is actually November 1st and 2nd, but this was the day I could get the room. So I hope that if you hear this in time, come over to the University of Baltimore and bring photographs of your dead people, bring sacred objects of the dead people, because I'm going to build a big shrine with candles and marigolds and tequila and, you know, do it up Day of the Dead style.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, too. Thanks, Marian.
Thank you, Lisa.
You can find more information about Marian Winnick's new collection, The Baltimore Book of the Dead, at wipr.org/programs/weekly-reader. That's also where you can find more episodes of our podcast, links to reviews, and more. The Weekly Reader podcast is made possible by the Ivy Bookshop. For The Weekly Reader, I'm Lisa Morgan.